This is a presentation, and a conversation, a chance for you to ask questions from the members of our Good Offices Contract Call Negotiations Support Team. The webinar is called How to Read Your Contract and Why It Matters. I'm Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. I'm the Director of Ministries for Collegial Care. Part of my portfolio is working with all of our Good Offices team, and we're celebrating the 1 year anniversary of this team, this Good Offices Contract Call Negotiation Support Team, which has just done really tremendous work, met a significant need amongst our UMA membership. And I'm really happy that they have prepared, not everybody on the team, but a segment of the team have prepared this workshop today for all of our collective learning. So I'm really happy you're here. So with those very brief words of introduction, I'm going to invite the lead of this team, Aya Simpson Newberry, to welcome you further and orient you to our plans for the day.
Excellent. Thank you, Melissa. So I'm Aya, and we are going to zoom through some points about the contract. We could spend many hours talking about it. We have spent many hours talking about it so that you do not have to spend many hours talking about it. With me today are Ruth Lillian, Matthew Johnson, David Schwartz, and Janet Bush, who will each have a section that they introduce to you. We will hopefully have time for questions at the end. So if you have any questions that aren't clarifying questions, if you could hold them to the end or put them in the chat, any that we don't get to in the chat, we will make sure someone follows up on. But we want to get through our material before we do questions. So with that, I'm going to ask Melissa to start our slideshow.
And Matthew, will you guide people how they can adjust how this appears on their screen?
I'd be happy to. I'm also putting in the chat a link to the recommended ministerial agreement for full-time lead senior ministers. So as we speak about particular sections, if you don't have that already in front of you or memorized, you'll be able to refer to it. So for those of you who don't know this, on Zoom, depending on what device you're on, there's a little bar between the shared screen part and the cameras. The videos, and you can click on that, and you should get two little arrows, and you can make the pictures bigger and the slideshow smaller so that you can see more of our faces. And we're not tiny people, but sort of medium-sized people, so you can still see the presentation.
So, one of the things to keep in mind before we go into any details is that, particularly if you are in settled search, if you are in that process, you will get a piece of paper that says where the contract has that they are offering has deviated from the standard recommended contract. So that is one starting place to go and see what has changed in your contract that will apply to all of our sections. So that is a good starting place. And if you are not in a search process where they are offering that, it is something you could ask a congregation to do, to go through and say, these are the places we have changed, so you know where you're looking. So we wanted to do this because, first of all, we just wanted to read your contract, read it carefully. I know that seems kind of like an odd baseline, but I know some of us get so wrapped up in the possibility of a new job, of the excitement of a new job, that we are inclined to just assume everything's kind of fine. So read your contract because this is a time to set yourself up for success. Having clarity about everything we do allows us to have solid, well-boundaried ministries. Knowing what happens if the ministry comes to an ending helps us to be thoughtful and careful and fully healthy in our relationships now. And the beginning of your ministry is the best time to negotiate things that are important to you. So it's the best time to negotiate financial things that are important to you. You have more leverage at the beginning of a ministry than you do really most any other time. And it's also the best time to negotiate all the other pieces that are in this, what your specific roles are, what your relationships will be. So the beginning of the ministry is an excellent time to set yourself up for a successful ministry going forward, and one that is clear and transparent. So that's our overview, and now I will kick it over to Matthew for section one.
Great, thank you. Section one is about goals and responsibilities. And this section is unlikely to have a lot of changes from the congregation. We'll talk about some of the possibilities. And it's something that you'll turn to later in your ministry, a chance to go back and say, we agreed that we would do these things, that I would be responsible for this part, that you, the congregation, would be responsible for this part, that we together would be responsible for this part. It's a high-level overview by and large, but it really is an opportunity for clarity and conversation. And to go back later and say, you know, we agreed that we were going to commit together to be anti-oppressive in the way that we did this. We agreed that we were going to work together on sharing the ministry and vision. See, it says right here in the contract, you remember? And so it's a chance for you to go back later. So changes in this section are rare. When they do show up, and this will be true throughout the contract, the first thing to do is to begin with curiosity, to ask them, well, why did you change that? What's going on? Is it fear of something? Is it something that's unclear for you? Are you bringing in a corporate mindset to in the wrong context? What is going on? So to ask if there are changes here, and the type of relationship. You might see there's a section about being in fellowship with the UUA, in an agreement with the UUMA guidelines. Some congregations might use different language that's left over from old bylaws or rules, something like in good standing, which isn't a term we use anymore for a bunch of reasons. So to say we want to be talking about being in fellowship with the UUA and to abide by the guidelines of the UUMA, that's in one of the paragraphs. Changes in the anti-oppression language, there are two paragraphs there about that, are rare. Most congregations aren't going to change that, but those sections are important, particularly if you have a marginalized identity, to be really clear about that. And those sections were worked hard on in the new version. And so changes are unlikely, but it's a good chance to talk about them with the search committee and say, how did this resonate with you when you read this? And then in negotiating in this section, there's not much to negotiate here, but the one thing you might sort of look at, there is a paragraph in here about that you may have a startup. The board and the minister may agree with a startup with congregational life staff. You might want to change that to will. If you really feel like it's essential to put that down, that you're going to do that, startups, when done well, really can help a ministry thrive. And the language is discretionary in this template, and you might want to say it's standard. I saw one congregation that changed that whole thing, and they wanted to do, we'll have a retreat together. That's not the same as a startup. So you might want to be particularly careful, but that's one of the few detail places in this section. A lot of it is a lot more general. So that is section one, and I'll turn it over to Janet for section two.
I am Janet Bush.
Yeah.
Hi, I serve our congregation in Northampton, Massachusetts. So this section is actually very specific, unlike unlike section one, and it really is about responsibilities and what you're going to be doing day to day, what the congregation expects you to do. So it really, real this one's important to read. They're all important, but this one's important to read as one of the ways to help you prepare for your interviews. Because it invites conversations about governance, your responsibility and authority, openness to change, and then specific areas of congregational life. And so, really reading this and thinking about what matters to you as you go through these different areas is going to give you a lot of information, not only about how the congregation does things, but also the areas that you might want to focus on, challenges you might meet in the beginning of your ministry. So as Matthew said, be curious, be gentle and gently curious as you go through. And this really is an opportunity to explore and clarify things. So I have some specific ideas on the next. Oh, and the other thing is if you are looking at a part-time position, part-time positions require trade-offs. And that's particularly for congregations that are going from full-time to three-quarter time, which increasingly they are not going to understand necessarily or have thought through necessarily what it means to be paying someone for three quarters of the job. So you're going to have to think about that and think about yourself. Are there specific areas that you want to de-emphasize? Get a clear understanding of their expectations. And there may be things that you want in this section of the agreement of the contract that relate to those areas and those expectations that you've already discussed. So we can look at the next one now. And so as you go through it, and you'll come up with other questions, but each area really suggests questions to ask in the interview process. Like, how does governance actually work? How do they understand and use policies? Worship, what does the worship committee do? What are worship associates do? Is there funding for outside preachers? How do they manage Sundays when the minister has them? And what are your expectations? What committees welcome ministerial participation? Personnel, how are those decisions made and what kind of support exists for personal administration? And I have a little more to say about that on the next one. It's possible, as I said before, that you will want changes or clarifying language in this section, especially if you're looking at a part-time position. And then 2.5 is about authority and responsibility. And it says very strongly that the minister is responsible for personnel. That may not be actually how the congregation operates. And there are reasons why you want to have authority, and there are reasons why you want to make sure that they understand that you're going to work collaboratively. But you need to ask yourself, find out what their processes really are and what their experiences have been, and ask yourself how you feel about the personnel responsibilities, however they're described. And if you want to change something, or you need to change something, or they've changed something, that's a place to get coaching from somebody on the contract team or from another colleague. Worship, again, congregations vary very widely, as a lot of you know, in how services not led by the minister are handled. So you want to know what accountable for all services means. And if it doesn't say you're accountable for all services, what does that mean? Again, as Matthew said, if it's missing, something like that is missing, be curious. Pulpit responsibilities. Are you comfortable with the number? Do you want to preach 35 times a year if you're full-time? And what's the number if you're part-time? And how do you think about that? And this is a possibility for trade-offs. I know of at least one person who is really passionate about social justice and very active in locally and in the state in social justice work, and who doesn't preach 3 Sundays a month because of that. And he made that agreement early on in his ministry. So community engagement is another one where you ought to clarify expectations in the interview. You might want to use language like as time permits or in ways the minister chooses. And this is also possibly an area for trade-off if your ministry is part-time. Or again, if it's your passion, let them know. And yeah, you need to explore this and find out what they expect and make sure that it's consonant with what you feel you can do and what you can expect, especially in the beginning of a new ministry. And then the wording in 2.5.1a or b, you want to look at that carefully, because policy governance implies a pretty rigid system that's very prescribed. So if the agreement says they're using it, you want to really understand if they really are and what that means to them. And then if you read 2.5.1, it could seem to imply that the minister is responsible for all policies and spend their time making policy. So you really want to understand in that area, how do they do things? How does the congregation really operate? And again, if you want help on that to come up with different language, please ask. I think that's all I had to say. So Ruth, pass it on to you.
Thanks, Janet. I'm Ruth Van Lillian. I'm serving a quarter-time contract at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of the Emerald Coast in Valparaiso, Florida. This section of the contract or letter of agreement, depending on what title you're working with, this is what I think of as the nuts and bolts. This is about your salary and housing. It is for ministers. There are other things like what's paid in lieu of FICA that is added to your taxable income. And then your monetary benefits, which include retirement contributions, your insurance, health insurance, dental insurance, your professional allowance, and moving expenses when you're going for the first time. And there's a lot to it. So you want to begin with, you know, where your head is and the job that you are planning to do, the work you're planning to do, the work that the congregation is asking you to do is not the kind of work that has a clear and definite fair monetary value, right? What we do is intricate, specialized, often unusual, sometimes routine. It's hard to put a monetary value on that. I encourage everyone to think in terms of generosity. If you can find a congregation that will be generous with you in how your salary and benefits are set up, then you are going to feel more inclined to be generous with them in how you do your work, the kind of time you spend. And I say this when I work with congregations. I'm also a compensation consultant. And so I urge congregations who are entering into the process, think in terms of generous. Generous begets generous. Part-time negotiations are tricky. There are fewer guidelines. There's a lot of inconsistency. If you talk to 10 different part-time ministers, you're going to hear 10 different versions of how they negotiated their contract. There is no such thing as a discount ministry. That is a myth. And some congregations may have in their mind that they can get more for their buck by hiring a part-time minister, paying part-time, and still really wanting more than part-time service. So don't agree to do less or to do more for less, because that devalues the ministry for all of us. All elements of Section 3 are negotiable, and that's important to remember. What you will be seeing when you review that portion of the contract kind of looks cut and dry, but everything is negotiable. There are some things that are affected by federal regulations. So some things that the federal government requires, that's not negotiable by either you or the congregation. And that's primarily to do with retirement. You want to ask, if you're presented with an offer, you want to ask about why a congregation is offering salary and housing and or benefits that are below the UUA standards. For instance, well, we can't afford to give all of the staff dental insurance, so we're not going to offer that to you either, which sounds, on the one hand, that sounds like a just position to take, because a minister doesn't want to be getting benefits that are not available to the other qualified staff. So you can talk with them about that, and you can say, well, what about setting up a plan to improve that? If I agree to come in with no dental insurance the first year, do you think you could get dental insurance in place for everyone qualified on staff, to including me? You know, so you could negotiate that point as well. You need to advocate for yourself. We go in, as, and I said it beautifully, we go in with enthusiasm, sometimes some rose-colored glasses, about a position that just looks like a wonderful place to work. Don't expect the very nice, very warm and welcoming people to necessarily be working for your best interest. The search team, the negotiating team, they are working on behalf of the congregation. And they are going to feel, rightly or wrongly, that it is their job to get as much minister for as little money as possible. So you have to keep your interest in mind. And that is not a selfish or unreasonable thing, because it is simply true that if your needs are not being adequately met through your contract, you're not going to be able to do as good or as much ministry. So it is actually for the good of the congregation that we are all compensated appropriately to meet our needs. You need to study the contract. You just need to. A lot of us don't like it, but you need to. And there's a lot of help out there. A lot of help out there. Okay, next slide. Thank you, Melissa. Oh, we're going to David. So let me just say one more thing. Find out if the people you're talking to have already engaged with a compensation consultant. It's free. It's free. They can, you know, email, call, or set up an appointment with a compensation consultant. We have a bunch of them, all very well trained by Jan Gardner and Richard Nugent. And there's no reason for any congregation to try to do it all on their own, setting up their compensation package. And it's not too late. If they talk to you and you're not satisfied, you could say, you know, I'd like to talk to you again, but would you please check in with a compensation consultant first? Utilize that free resource. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I'm David Schwartz. I serve our congregation in Boulder, Colorado. And section four is work and leave provisions. So this defines how much time do you spend working? How do you take time away? When can you take time away? How does compensation work when you're away? How does that time away accrue? Do you get paid for any of it if you leave? I think the important thing to start with here is that some of the stuff in this section is going to obviously apply to you right away. Some of this stuff won't be relevant for years, like sabbatical. Some of the stuff in this section may feel entirely irrelevant to you right now. You may have no plans to have kids in your life. You may have no plans to be out on extended medical leave. But still, the time to negotiate and to make sure that stuff is in here is now, so that you're not talking about how does my medical leave work in the moment of crisis. Fundamentally, and this is building on what Ruth was just saying, the point of this section is to protect your well-being for the good of the congregation. So with that said, let's dig into some of the specifics. As with every section, when there is a variance from the standard, the first thing to do is to try and understand why is there a variance. First and commonly, state laws around leave vary wildly. Different states have different laws around medical leave, parental leave. Some states have school leave laws where parents are guaranteed leave to go to kids' stuff. So it may be that that's what's at play. Second thing, second common reason that congregations tend to vary from the standard is that they are setting provisions in reaction to the previous minister. The previous minister was very hard to get a hold of, let's say. And so in the contract is this definition around you must be available, you know, during these 20 hours of the day or something like that. And it's not that the issue that they may be reacting to isn't real. It's not that they don't need some amount of reassurance or confidence that you'll take those things seriously, which they felt weren't taken seriously before. It's just that contracts tend to be a really bad place to do that sort of thing, because contracts are hard to change, hard to adapt. So you want to take the issue seriously, but deal with it somewhere other than the contract. Sometimes congregations have a variance here because the previous minister undervalued it. The previous minister never took their study leave, so the congregation's offering you 1 week instead of 4 weeks. Which is to say, on both of those counts, that often, like so many areas of the contract, there's a certain amount of education that you need to be doing in the process. It may not be that the search committee thinks you shouldn't get this thing. Maybe that they just plain don't understand why it matters. And then sometimes there's scarcity or resistance. There's laborers in the vineyard resistance. I didn't get this benefit, so nobody else should get this benefit. I only got 1 day off for bereavement leave in my corporate career. Why are we giving you all this time? That kind of stuff. That shows up around sabbatical too. You know, people say, well, I'm in a helping profession. I never got sabbatical. Yeah, that's horrible. You should have. So again, a lot of the task here, you know, beyond seeking to understand why, is education. And if you haven't done that before, you know, get support on it. I think it's worth saying, especially about section three and section four, that the time you're investing in negotiating this contract, in prepping for it, and doing all your analysis of where in the compensation guidelines do I follow, and how do I convince people that yes, sabbaticals actually matter, this is going to be hour for hour the most highly compensated work you ever do. You know, invest the extra 5 hours to figure out how to make a really compelling pitch, and that will reward you with 5 months of paid sabbatical years from now. So, frame for the conversation here. I think this is true in this section and in the compensation section too, is that the goal of all of this is not that there's a little pie and you and they are trying to both get the biggest share that you can. It is in everyone's interest for you to thrive. This, you know, is an impossible, infinite, all-consuming, absurd job. And the protections are here for you, for the ministry, for the congregation. And I guess the last thing to say, I feel like very sort of hard-nosed to say it, but even with all of these protections, you're still responsible for actually taking your time. You know, obviously the congregation is not responsible for holding your boundaries. But I said that especially for year one, because if you're starting August 1st, it can be really hard to take 4 weeks of vacation and 4 weeks of study leave when typically that might have happened in the month of July. So be intentional right from day one about how am I going to use study and vacation in that first year. That's what I got. Thanks.
So I am Aya again. So section five is sort of terms and termination. And this section covers how your ministry will end. And that is every kind of ending, a ending through retirement, an ending because you have found another job, an ending for death, and also negotiated resignations. So knowing this information can both help support your ministry as it is, but also I think of this, having clarity in this section, as doing work for the future of the ministry of both you and the congregation. So having clarity about how a ministry will end, whether it is the best possible ending or if it's a conflicted ending, allows the congregation and the minister to end without hurting each other in ways that will affect future ministries. So making sure that we have clarity, that this is not an area of conflict, that this is not an area that people have the opportunities to tell multiple different stories about, is a way that we both protect our current ministry, but protect the future ministries of ourselves and the congregation. So if we can go to the next slide. So some of the places that this might be negotiated, one of them is around term. Does this ministry have an end date? So for those of you in a settled ministry search, it might well be until resignation or a vote of the board, but many of our contract ministries do have an end date and do have either a continuation or an automatic continuation or a vote for continuation. So that's one question. When does this ministry end? There's another section about how much notice will be given to the congregation. 3 months is pretty standard. If they have changed that notice period, why? What are the needs behind that shift? What are the things they're trying to prevent? And then the piece that we often see the most confusion about is the part about negotiated resignation. And this is about how much severance you're entitled to in the event of a negotiated resignation. But I think it's really important to note that the term negotiated resignation is a little confusing. In our common parlance, a negotiated resignation is almost always initiated by the congregation, not the minister. So in many ways, it is a negotiated termination. It is what the congregation will offer in the event that the board or whatever governing body has decided that this ministry needs to come to an end. It is not typically what we will negotiate if a minister decides that it's time to leave and that they are resigning. And that language is confusing but important. So this is how much severance are you entitled to in the event that the congregation decides the ministry is nearing an end. Let's see the next, there we go. Every section of section five can and has been negotiated. As I mentioned, some congregations will try to extend the notice period or remove the section about the congregation paying 3 months of salary in the event that they would like to accept an immediate resignation. But the main piece that you will see changed or eliminated entirely is section 5.5.1. Many congregations will try and cap the number of months at a lower number than 10. It's the standard is that the congregation will pay for 1 month of salary per year of service up till 10 years of service, or remove it entirely. It's important to us that if this is not in it, that you have no legal recourse for severance in the event of a ministry that is ended by a congregation. That doesn't mean there's not space for negotiation, but as I mentioned before, if you have to go in and have a negotiation based on things that aren't in the contract, there's much more opportunity for ill feeling. Which brings us to section six, which is dispute resolution. So in the event of a disputed ending, everyone should have someone trusted to go with this process. So please reach out to your good officer early in the process if you think you're nearing a disputed ending, or even just think there's something going on that might lead there. It is important to note, I think there's some confusion that people think that if you don't have an official negotiated resignation, that you will not have that leave period at the end of your ministry. It is our understanding from speaking to congregational life staff that anyone who has a difficult ending will be put on hold by the MFC before they're able to go into the next search process. So this isn't like a thing that you can avoid by not having a thing with a specific word. In most cases, in almost every case, mediation between the minister and the congregation gets us where we need to go. But in some very, very small number of cases, it will be moved to arbitration. So that is what is explained in that part of the contract, how the arbitration process works. This is a section of dispute resolution that is very rarely changed. I don't think I've actually ever seen it changed. It's pretty standard language. So if you see a change, that would be an area to be really curious. What are they hoping to avoid? Why did they feel like this process wouldn't work? What are their reasons for that? And amendment and choice of law. So this is the legalese of the document. It details how you can change it, how you can amend it. It indicates that if one section, it usually indicates that if one section is found invalid, the remainder still exists. And it also gives you any relevant information from your place. So like California in particular has much stronger worker protection laws. So you're going to see a lot more in this section if you are looking at a ministry in California than in another part of the country. So those are the parts that are relevant to your particular place. This is another area in which there is very little variance. And if there is a change in the section, we strongly recommend you consulting with a member of the transitions team first to see if they have any thoughts, and potentially consulting with legal counsel, because this is very much the part that is beyond our skill set if it is changed. So, and I think that's the whole document. Does anyone from the, before we open up for questions, does anyone from the team have anything they feel like they missed or that they wanted to add? And also I wanted to draw people's attention to the fact that in the chat, someone asked about what a startup is, and Matthew answered that in the chat if you have any questions about that. Janet,
I just wanted to say briefly that some search committees may not actually have read the contract. And so somehow you have to figure that out. Maybe you ask them. But you certainly don't want your interviews to be focused on the contract, to have them think, oh, you're just this, you know, wonky legal person. On the other hand, especially if a congregation hasn't gone through search for a long time, they are not familiar with this contract. And so it's worth, again, I go back to Matthew. Just be curious. Have you guys actually read the contract? Because when I've been advised and that I really should read it, and so I did, and I'm just wondering, have members of the search committee actually reviewed it? And if they say no, just, okay, well, there are some things in there that I think we should talk about. So that's all I wanted to say. You don't assume they've read it.
It's also worth noting that some congregations now are setting up negotiating teams who are not part of the search committee. So it's possible that the search committee, if you have questions, are going to have like a section or a series of questions that they have to ask out and bring back in. So that's also a likely possibility. Ruth, did you have something else to add from the time?
Yes. Somehow we jumped over one of my slides. I'm not sure how that happened. But anyway, I wanted to revisit. So the first thing is for you, the minister, to go to UUA.org and find the Congregational Salary Program page. That is the newest version of what we used to think of merely as the GO Index and the salary recommendations. But it's gotten more material in it. Jan and Sean and Richard have been very careful and intentional about improving and expanding this. You need to know the congregation's geo index, the size, and the salary range. Do not assume your negotiating team will know those things. If they have not consulted with a compensation consultant, they may not know their own information accurately. And then you use that as the information that you use to negotiate. So it's a salary range, and you plug in your credentials, your education, your training, your years and type of experience. You know, I am right out of internship. I expect a starting salary, or I'm out of internship, but I have all this other experience, so I think I ought to be getting a midpoint salary, or, you know, I've had many years experience. I specialize in these particular ministries. That's what they want. I'm expecting to get above midpoint. You want to be clear about where you think you fit on the range according to these things. And then finally, I mentioned it earlier, but I want to emphasize the federal regulations that everyone's got to be aware of have to do with retirement contributions. And it's very important that you ask to see a copy of the congregation's participation agreement. Every congregation that participates in the UUA retirement program has already been through a process and signed a document that says what percentage of an employee's salary they're going to contribute as a retirement contribution. And there's nothing you can put in a contract that can override that participation agreement. Your negotiating team may have no idea what that participation agreement says. The standard is for the minister and all qualified personnel to receive 10%. But if they've already got an agreement that only says 5%, that's all you can get until that participation agreement is changed, and it can only be changed at the end of the calendar year. If they don't know what their participation agreement says or they don't have a copy, you just contact retirementplan@uua.org and they can provide one. So it's not secret. It's a posted information that everyone should be able to access. And again, the minister cannot get a different percentage from any other qualified personnel on staff. Thank you. That is what I want to be sure we got included.
Thank you so much, Ruth.
Thank you all. We just have a minute left. And so I want to, again, say if you would like an individual consultation with a member of our team, just fill out that intake form and we'll get you matched as soon as we can. If you have very technical questions that were beyond the scope of what we covered here, or sounds like anything having to do with the Medicaid issue, then maybe Jan is going to be more helpful as those questions get answered. As you all depart today, if you have a moment, I would welcome you to put some words of appreciation for our colleagues who have said yes to this particular service, serving on the Good Offices Contract Call and Negotiation Support Team. It's not everybody who likes to do this or feels equipped to answer these kinds of questions and to do this kind of study. So I'm really grateful to our colleagues who have said yes and have prepared so well to be of service to all of you. So thank you for joining me in the appreciations. Thank you all for coming. It's so important because when we do this well, we don't only contribute to our own flourishing and the flourishing of our congregations, but to the flourishing of the ministers who follow us when we leave any particular place. And with that, it's the top of the hour where you are, and our time has come to a conclusion. I can stay for a few moments. Any members of the team, if you have a moment to stay, if there's anyone who has a particular question, you're welcome to. Otherwise, thanks for coming today. And good luck for all of you who are negotiating contracts and letters of call this spring.